The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
Good morning. Welcome to the Friday, the day before St. Patrick's Day edition of Ask the Pastor. KFUO Radio is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. I'm Roland Lettner. Thank you for joining us. Thanks again to Pastor Nabil Noor for the lesson in Genesis chapter 22. I'll be sending off that comparison chart to Paul Clayton, see if we can get that put up on the KFUO website for you, so that if you want to do a little self-study through chapter 22 or bring it up at church sometime in your Bible study, you can certainly do that. Well, here we are the day before St. Patrick's Day. I must say that, you remember when you were a kid, Pastor Andrus, did you have to endure that insufferable day, St. Patrick's Day, because if you didn't wear green, everybody pinched you? Oh, my goodness, what happened to Pastor Dave? Well, perhaps we can get Buzz to get him back on the line for us real quick here. Pastor Dave Andrus is the executive director of Lutheran Blind Mission. He's supposed to be joining us for Ask the Pastor this morning. But let me start you out with this. Since I mentioned, we're having a little bit of phone trouble this morning, so bear with us, folks. We will get Pastor Dave right back up on the line. There is a story that comes out of a Massachusetts public school. Speaking of St. Patrick's Day, you know, we often discuss all the difficulty that we have in expressing, even in the simplest forms, Christ in the public square. Well, here comes a story from, I believe it's from the Christian Post. It's a Massachusetts public school. It removed St. Patrick's Day from their official school calendar. Pastor Dave, how are you, my friend?
I am fine, thank you.
I don't know what happened to you. I am sorry if we...
That's okay.
No, we love you. We love you. Honestly, we do.
Well, we're connected.
We'll be sending flowers.
Oh, gee.
As I was mentioning, Pastor Dave Andrus is the executive director of Lutheran Blind Mission. And before I realized that you weren't with me for a moment, I started out by asking you a question, and I'll ask it again. Do you remember back in grade school, you and I are sort of contemporaries in age here, remember back in grade school, if you happened upon St. Patrick's Day and you weren't wearing green, the kids would pinch you all day long? Or was that just quirky to where I went to school?
I think that's more your school. I'm sorry. We did emphasize wearing green and a few other things, but I don't remember being pinched. No.
Well, maybe.
Must have been just the way you looked and smiled there.
I guess so, Pastor. I was an abused child, and you can see that in the way I conduct myself now. Hey, but anyhow, there's a story that comes out of the Christian Post today that talks about a Massachusetts public school removing St. Patrick's Day from its official school calendar. It's a public school.
Huh.
And it says, but what's interesting is the way the story starts out here. St. Patrick's Day is a holiday rooted in Christian values. However, secular celebrations are also regularly held to commemorate the day. In fact, for a great many, the religious tones aren't even a consideration, as alcohol, shamrock shakes, and other fun-filled elements regularly dominate the day's observance. Well, at least it's an honest news story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, many of our holidays, because we are rooted within a Christian heritage, many of our holidays come from Christian celebrations, whether it be Easter and Christmas. It used to be called Easter break. Now they call it spring break.
Yeah.
Christmas break. And St. Patrick's Day does have its roots as well, within a Christian heritage of St. Patrick, who brought Christianity throughout Ireland. But as I recall growing up, even as that article notes, it was more the shamrocks and the green and the flute, having the snakes leave Ireland. And I don't remember him ever. Actually, I didn't know until years later that he was a Christian and that he was actually one who brought Christianity to Ireland.
Now, it says that this Massachusetts elementary school, the Soul Road, and it's, the Soul is spelled S-O-U-L-E, which makes us a little bit ironic that the school's on Soul Road. It's in Wilbraham. It came under fire after the media reported that certain school leaders were placing St. Patrick's Day's name Well, sort of on a banned list, and they were replacing it with a different name. Do you know what they were going to refer to it as being on the calendar?
What?
Old Green Day.
Old Green Day.
Old Green Day. Old apostrophe Green
Day.
Old Green Day.
Old Green Day. Old Green Day to ya.
You see, because even as much of a secular holiday as this has become, just because there might be the slightest little implication that it's somehow connected to Christianity, we're offending people.
Let's bring
Herman in on this and see what he has to say. Good morning, Herman. Looking forward to your call. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning. And I'm on the topic of St. Patrick's here. I would propose something even further radical and drastic. I call it the Lutheranizing of St. Patrick's Day. If we look at really who he was, his creedal Trinitarian affirmation of Jesus Christ and the Holy Trinity, that he would essentially stand with Luther in terms of his witness of the quality of Christian confession centered in faith in Jesus Christ. You could play the hymn of I Bind Myself, Patrick's, the hymn attributed to his creedal confession known as the breastplate. Play that with Martin Luther as a mighty fortress. The complementariness would be extremely close. And I think that's, I heard that on things of that nature and discussed on the Issues Etc. program yesterday on KFUO dealing with St. Patrick. So I think there's certainly a evangelical and confessional and creedal biblical unity there that's with St. Patrick and Luther. And we Lutherans can celebrate St. Patrick, too.
Pastor Dave?
I will agree with Herman. In fact, a little side trip here. Mentioning side trips, my wife and I took our 30th anniversary trip to Ireland. And it was a wonderful 10-day visit there. And the first stop was to Trinity College. And they had there some of St. Patrick's writings, including his Bible, as I recall. And we stopped and paused and read some of the things attributed to him. And he had an extremely a faithful and strong statement to the Trinity. Absolutely. And what Herman is saying, I think, could hold very, very true, that Patrick would fit very well within the saints and the writers throughout the centuries who hold fast to a strong biblical confession of the Trinity.
Also, historically, the Christianity that Patrick was based in the British Isles later, it's from that basis of Christianity that the missionary Boniface goes into Germany, and Christianity spreads there in the 8th century and into Northern Europe. And consequently, that's how Lutherans and their ancestors became Christians.
Huh.
And also, while that's happening in the 8th century on, Islam is eclipsing Christianity in Arabia and North Africa. So you can't really argue that Christianity is a white man's religion, looking at the scope even of the early church.
Indeed. Good points. I didn't know that about... who was the gentleman you said came from St. Patrick's heritage that went to Germany?
His name was Boniface.
Boniface. You
Boniface,
just...
yes.
And I have heard of him. I didn't realize he... Yeah, very
he
good.
He led the missionary effort into Germany among people who were then pagans. So Patrick dealt with paganism in Ireland. Boniface dealt with paganism in Germany and Europe. So... That corpus of Christianity in the British Isles had been well experienced in dealing with the pagan mind world and proclaiming the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Herman. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
So who knew it was St. Patrick von Ireland?
Huh. Very interesting.
I like that. Good call, Herman. You know, also, probably something we neglect is that we owe... The church in general, I think, owes a great debt of gratitude to the Irish people because, as Herman mentioned, when Islam was sort of rearing its ugly head and it was coming up through Europe, and there were uncertain days, especially during the Dark Ages, as to what would happen to the church, Ireland served as sort of an ark, sort of a protective place where many of these ancient writings were kept safe. And like Herman points out with Boniface, Christianity then radiated back out into Europe, mm-hmm. you know, through Ireland.
Which just testifies, just the way you describe that, you know, we get bent out of shape and worried about this and that trend, and I have commented, I'm concerned as I see pressure being put upon churches and I see the face of Christianity seemingly diminishing here in the United States, even as it did in Europe a couple decades ago to where it is now. It's still God's church. He is in control. And he will always keep a firm foothold so that his gospel may continue to move forward.
Well, as much as we may worry and fret, it is ultimately God who defends his church.
Indeed, it is.
Amen. You know, the other thing that I wanted to bring up, we touched on this last week. Have you been following this controversy with this priest who denied communion to this lesbian woman at her mother's funeral?
Well, follow it closely, no, but I am aware of the situation, yes.
Well, let me quickly play a bit of audio for you that was the original news story that I ran last week, and now there's a follow-up to it because the priest, who has been put under discipline by his bishop, mm-hmm. has now spoken out about the situation. Let me play for you what the background is.
All right.
Nine News Now.
There are a few moments in life sadder than the passing of your mother, but now imagine facing that reality along with a heavy dose of Catholic rules that could make someone feel left out.
That's what one Northwest Washington woman says happened to her as she was trying to lay her mom to rest. Matt Jablow picks up the details in a story you'll see only on 9 News Now.
I was stunned.
It's been an extremely difficult week for Barbara Johnson, perhaps the most difficult week of her life.
I feel very sad.
It all started on Saturday at St. John Newman Catholic Church in Gaithersburg, where friends and family had gathered to say goodbye to Barbara's mother, who died last week after a brief illness.
I was in the first pew in the first seat, right next to my mother's coffin.
Just a few minutes before the funeral began, Father Marcel Guarnizzo, who was presiding over the service, apparently learned that Barbara was involved in a romantic relationship with another woman.
I am a lesbian.
A lifelong Catholic and former Catholic school teacher, Barbara says she hadn't even considered that her sexual orientation would be a problem with Father Marcel until she stepped forward to take communion.
He said, "I cannot give you communion because you live with a woman."
Though shaken by Father Marcel's actions, Barbara says she tried to compose herself to give her mother the dignified funeral she deserved. So a few minutes later, Barbara began her eulogy.
At which time, Father Marcel left the altar and did not return until I finished my eulogy.
According to Barbara, the story gets even worse, because after first refusing to give Barbara communion, then walking off the altar when she was giving her eulogy, Father Marcel refused to accompany Barbara's mother's body to the cemetery here in Aspen Hill. Barbara says she was told that Father Marcel had suddenly become ill.
No other family should have to suffer what we did from this man.
In a written statement, the Archdiocese of Washington conceded that Father Marcel acted improperly, saying, quote, "Any issues regarding the suitability of an individual to receive communion should be addressed by the priest with that person in a private pastoral setting."
The Archdiocese of Washington has said it exactly right.
Barbara Johnson says she's satisfied with the statement, though she adds that the damage done both to her family and to her mother's memory could never be repaired.
We don't get a do-over. This was her one moment to pass from this earth.
Matt Jablow, 9 News Now.
And in fact, Barbara says she's hoping that Father Marcel will be removed from parish life. The Archdiocese of Washington will only say that the incident will now be handled as a personnel issue.
Now, if you listen to that news story, Pastor, this priest sounds like a pretty coarse, pretty mean guy.
Certainly, this story reports him as a mean guy.
Well, as Paul Harvey used to say, and now the rest of the story.
The rest of the story is, though the priest does not hold to communion as a Lutheran does, the priest does hold it as a sacred gift, which is something Lutherans also hold. And so, technically, on the books, Roman Catholics are to practice close communion, which is that it be given to people who are repentant, who see that the gift is as the church professes. And it was his judgment at that moment that she was not living a repentant life and therefore refused her.
Well, as I said, here comes the rest of the story. Now, the priest has responded, and as you point out, now I think it's important because when the Health and Human Services mandate came down, the Roman Church made a very strong stand against it, and President Matt Harrison went to Congress and testified before them. Rightly so, credit was given to them for making the right stand for the sake of the church. Uh-huh. I mean the church universal, not just the Roman Church.
Right.
But I think also when that same church does something that may be sort of politically expedient, maybe it's worthwhile to point this out as well. Because this priest said that he did the only thing a faithful Catholic priest could do in such an awkward situation. Now, it says that he refused to provide communion, and he did so quietly and without fanfare. The woman came forward. He declined to give it to her. Mm-hmm. Now, here's something that the news story happened to leave out.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, Johnson, the woman in question here, ended up getting communion from a Eucharistic minister who was standing just 4 feet away from the priest.
Oh, my.
So it's not as if she was denied, as the story implied. She received it from... Matter of fact, this priest was so quiet in his denial to her, trying to make it as private as he could,
mm-hmm.
that the Eucharistic minister standing just 4 feet away didn't hear it or see anything unusual.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Hmm. So the priest also clarified that he, like other priests, is not anxious to withhold communion,
right.
but that the circumstances led to this, mm-hmm. and in his view, warranted such an action. He also points out that Ms. Johnson was a guest in the parish, not a regular member of that church,
mm-hmm.
and she should not be seen as the arbiter of how sacraments are dispensed in the Catholic Church. And I think I would like to add a little something more to this, but you know what? We've got a caller. Paul wants to add a little bit to this. He knows where the story is going. Paul, come on in. Finish the story for us.
Hi. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's been in the news, at least in certain news outlets. But they even have written proof that, other than the fact that this woman was and is an activist for homosexual agendas, she is also a self-professed Buddhist. Were you cognizant of that?
I don't know if you heard about that, Pastor Andrus. I have that in the story in front of me here.
No, I did not. She is a self-professed Buddhist?
Buddhist.
Yes.
She's a practicing Buddhist. I have seen this both on Catholic and other media sources. You Google it. I believe even Fox News, one of the people who contribute to them, had it on their website. But it's also a Catholic website, and they have written proof. She was going for a master's degree and has been an in-your-face type of activist, going to... Catholic schools, what have you, and it would seem that there's a lot more to the story, and
interesting, yeah.
You know, she's pushing an agenda for the church to accept what both the Church of Rome and Confessional Lutherans believe as a sin. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Paul. Good call.
Does it indicate in this story why the priest, according to the priest, he denied her communion? Was it on the basis of her being a homosexual or on the basis of being a Buddhist?
It was on the basis of her being in a relationship with another woman. Oh, and by the way, an earlier story, her life partner, quote-unquote, was sitting next to her in the front pew. So they made no secret of this. The priest was aware of her lifestyle. Let's just say that.
Now it is according to the priest, quoted by the priest that that is why he declined her, giving her communion.
Yes.
Not her story. Because, again, I'm starting to question this whole story and how it's being reported by the news.
Exactly.
Because it's not giving everything. I think he could have, although there is question in the Roman Catholic Church, some there is this, we talked about it last time I was on the air, a doctrine by the Roman Catholic Church that says as long as you're a faithful person within your religion, you can get to heaven. It's not by faith alone, on Christ's work alone. Many Roman Catholics struggle with that and would say, no, you're a practicing Buddhist, and therefore you're not a Roman Catholic, and he could deny her on that basis as well.
Yeah. Now, the story goes on to say here, if a Quaker, a Lutheran, or a Buddhist desiring communion had introduced himself as such before Mass, a priest would be obligated to withhold communion.
Yeah.
If someone had shown up in my sacristy drunk or high on drugs, no communion would have been possible either.
Huh?
If a Catholic divorced or remarried without an annulment would make it known that they, in the sacristy, that they too wanted to commune, according to Catholic doctrine, they also would be impeded from receiving communion. This has nothing to do with a certain canon that's being cited here. Ms. Johnson's circumstances were precisely one of those relations which impede her access to communion, according to Catholic teaching.
You know, this is going to continue to be a problem that our secular society is saying and imposing upon the church. You should be as accepting of things as we are, and this is one thing we accept, and therefore you should be accepting it. And the church has been pretty clear in many areas, even as you've just noted, that we are not accepting of these things. This is going to continue to come up, and who knows where it's going to go yet.
Well, the thing that's really sort of awkward here for the Catholic Church is that his bishop, Bishop Barry Kniestout, has removed him from official duties because of the complaints they've received about him.
Now, that one does surprise me, why that is done. It seems like he did everything appropriate.
Well, it's the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C.
That's your editorial comment, huh?
Yes.
You're just reporting.
Just reporting.
What it is, I see.
Just being Joe Friday here. You know, no political activism goes on in D.C., and I'm sure not in the Archdiocese of D.C. either. Yeah, but this priest still remains, as of today, at least the news story that was posted yesterday on the 15th, as removed from official duties.
You know, this could have easily have been not just a Roman Catholic church, but it could have been a Lutheran church.
Sure.
Where the same thing would have been done, that no, we won't give you communion on the basis of this. And it could be a Lutheran that's in the news just as easily. It's going to be a problem that we as Christians and confessing Christians to holding to a line of belief are going to continually run into in the years to come.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's the Ask the Pastor portion of our program today. The Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission, our guest, Pastor Dave Andrus. And Pastor Dave, when we get back, there's another story from the Christian Post today that's talking about a new trend sort of in cultural ethics, and that is seeing people that are handicapped better off dead than living with a handicap. We'll be right back. The break is a great time to call in and join us.
Servanthood is a core value of Concordia Seminary. To be a servant is alien to so many people in our society. Even some clergy take on authoritarian airs. But Jesus, Son of God and Lord of all, came as a servant. We want Concordia graduates to model servanthood to their congregations and to their communities. Servanthood, that's the Christian way.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
At a recent political rally, Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards cozied up to the United Auto Workers in an effort to promote her pro-abortion agenda. She said, "We're proud to stand with you. We've got your back, and we know you have ours." But she's got a reason to be cocky. Labor union PACs have poured tens of millions of dollars into the coffers of pro-abortion candidates. But many blue-collar union members are pro-life. They want their dues to support their jobs, not the killing of innocent unborn babies. I say to the millions of auto workers and union members, it's time to stand up for your pro-life beliefs. Demand your leadership have your back, not the back of the abortion industry like Planned Parenthood. Don't let them use your money to kill unborn babies.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
During the season of Lent, KFUL Radio will broadcast live midweek worship services from Peace Lutheran Church in South St. Louis County. Be listening Wednesdays in Lent at 11 in the morning for these special broadcasts. Pastor Dennis Kastens will be leading the worship. Lent is a season of preparation so that we all may better appreciate the death and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ. KFUL Radio will assist in your preparation. Be listening for our live Lenten worship broadcast Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on KFUL Radio. You're invited to spend part of your Sunday morning with us here at KFUL Radio. Every Sunday morning, we bring you two worship broadcasts. Our early service comes from Peace Lutheran Church in South St. Louis County at 8 a.m. The senior pastor is Reverend Dennis Kastens. Our second service comes from Hope Lutheran Church in St. Anne and begins at 10:45. The Reverend Tim Ostermeyer is pastor there. We are pleased to bring you these two worship broadcasts every Sunday on KFUL Radio because we are where you are.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Jeske from Time of Grace. Did you know that in addition to hearing Time of Grace every Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on KFUO, you can also see Time of Grace every Sunday morning? Watch us on ABC 30 every Sunday morning at 6:30 for some straight talk and real hope.
Saturday mornings at 11:30 on KFUO Radio.
A Hollywood amphitheater has been taken over by worshipers praying for spiritual revival in the entertainment industry. Thursday's event, called the Cry Hollywood, attracted young Christians and their elders, like 77-year-old singer Pat Boone and his wife.
This means so much to us because all these years we've lived in what seems like a Sodom and Gomorrah. That is because of the product that's produced and it emanates from here.
But Shirley Boone reminded worshipers at Universal Studios Gibson Amphitheater,
the Word of God says, where sin abounds, my grace does that much more abound. So we need to shout grace over Hollywood.
Yes, that's right.
And Pat Boone said there's hope for the Los Angeles entertainment community.
We know that God has not abandoned this place. It's not called the City of the Angels for no reason. He wants Hollywood to be Hollywood.
I'm Steve Coleman.
Good morning and welcome back to Ask the Pastor here on KFUO Radio, listener-supported KFUO Radio. I'm Roland Lettner. Our guest pastor this morning is Pastor Dave Andrus. He serves as Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission. And before I lead into this next story, Pastor, I kind of teased you going into the break, take a moment and explain for folks what Lutheran Blind Mission does. And again, you know, I want you to do this every time because there are good ministries out there and they deserve our support, and Lutheran Blind Mission is one of those.
Well, thank you very much. Lutheran Blind Mission's whole intent is to help people who are blind and visually impaired have a relationship with Jesus. We do that through materials, braille, large print, audio. We also do it through what we call outreach centers, where we gather people together for fellowship, because we have learned that 95% of those who are blind and visually impaired, and there are 12 million in the U.S., 95% are unchurched. They are unable to get to church, or because of bad situations that have happened in their lives, they choose not to go to church because they think God's angry and punishing them. And so the outreach centers, as well as our other ministry aspects, help them to come in contact with a loving, caring God through loving, caring people. We are more than happy, and we need people's support, both financially, prayers, as well as donation, as well as volunteer support. Easiest way to contact us is through our website, blindmission.org, or we can be also reached by phone, toll-free, 888-215-2455.
Now, the story that I reference comes from the Christian Post, and it's a story where Joni Erickson Tada is being interviewed. Now, for folks who don't know, she is someone who was who suffered a spinal cord injury many, many years ago and has conducted a very interesting and vibrant ministry. She's also engaged in getting wheelchairs and other prosthetics to people in the third world who otherwise would not have the ability to lead, you know, a more normal life without those things. And she received what's called the Wilberforce Award, and she was asked in this interview about this growing trend. Now, we've done stories in the last 2 weeks about the alleged I say alleged because when you hear this, the alleged bioethicists who are advocating for post-birth abortion. I'm sure you've heard about that story.
Then
just yesterday we talked about in the northwestern part of the United States, I think it was in Washington State, though I may not have that absolutely right, a couple sued a hospital and doctors for wrongful birth because the child that was delivered was not diagnosed as being Down syndrome. And if it were have been diagnosed as Down syndrome, well, they would have aborted that child because they wouldn't want it to have lived a crummy life, you know, as somebody who was disabled. So the question comes up here. It's about this disturbing belief that's spreading across the country. It's sort of becoming almost boilerplate in some corners of, like, the pro-death movement that says a person is better off dead than disabled. I don't know if that gives you pause or not in the work that you do.
Oh, absolutely does. And I understand why, this might sound odd, but I understand why it's being pushed and promoted, because many people who are blind and visually impaired or with other disabilities are isolated, alone. Life is frustrating, and they don't live much of a life at all. But it's not because of their disability and handicap, but rather because of the way people treat them, view them, and work with them. So the fault really is people, the normal people, not those with any disability.
Hey, who are you calling names, mister?
Yeah. And so really, even with myself, I am totally blind. I have no vision whatsoever. My disability is not that I can't see, but my disability almost all the time is people and their attitudes towards me. No, I might not be able to drive a car, but quite frankly, my two daughters don't drive cars either. Well, they're underage, but see, there's qualifications. I know other people who are sighted and fine, but they choose not to drive a car. Now, on the flip side, there are many things I am capable of doing, even though I quote-unquote can't see, and you cannot. Does that make you inadequate? I don't think so. But we don't see it that way, that we are gifted and have different abilities. Rather, we say, you're not normal, and so we have to treat you differently. And that's where the problem of handicaps enters in most of the time. And so, yes, I get very frustrated when I hear things like this, because it is minimizing life and not letting life live at its fullest, and it isn't the person who is the problem, but it's society and how they view them.
90% of children in the womb diagnosed as Down syndrome are aborted.
Oh.
And now, as science is becoming better at identifying, you know, genetic indicators of other things, perhaps even like blindness, more and more frequently these children are being aborted. And I don't know, Pastor, you tell me, I'm sort of a cynic on this, that it's not about sort of this misguided idea of being sympathetic, that you wouldn't want a child to be burdened with such a thing. I think it's absolutely selfish. I think parents don't want to be burdened by this.
Right.
It's got nothing to do with the child. It's got everything to do with them in this me culture in which we live.
Absolutely. Parents of children who have a disability. I'm thinking of learning disabilities or emotional disabilities. I have occasion, because of my kids, to see kids in schools that are challenged, and they have the IEPs, individual educational plan, and sometimes the parents say, "Oh, it's such a struggle working with my child." And I say, "Really? Why?" And they, they don't excel in education, and they don't. Well, so, I absolutely agree with you that it is more of a selfish thing that we just want to live along our merry life and not be faced with these things. When sitting down and being patient with a child with whatever the disability might be, whether it's a learning disability, emotional disability, a blindness, or in a wheelchair, it helps us as people to slow down, be more patient, and here's the dilemma, to learn to be thankful and to learn to be kind. But we don't want to take time for those things.
You know, with the Lutheran doctrine of vocation, and especially our understanding of the Fourth Commandment, you know, much like the HHS mandate, we should probably be screaming the loudest about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, here's how Joni Erickson Tada, you know, finishes this portion of her response to this trend. When we disregard the rights of the weakest and most vulnerable among us, the rights of all of us are in jeopardy.
Absolutely. And just as you started reading it, what flashed in my head is, okay, if this would be an acceptable thing through genetic markings to understand that, okay, anyone with Down syndrome, blindness, deafness, we abort them. Okay, boom, they're aborted, they're gone. Whew, our life is better, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Now what happens, like
Joni Erickson Tada.
Joni. She was 19 when she had the diving accident and became a paraplegic. Oh, well, no, she's not perfect. So, okay, we can cut her life off now, because we just don't deal with those things in life anymore. Remember, we aborted them. We don't have to deal with life this way. So it gives us the privilege, or at least one step down the slippery slope, whenever anyone has an issue, we can terminate life based upon that.
Pastor, I'm telling you, if this culture keeps going the way it is, we're going to have to dig up guys like Goering and Bormann and Goebbels and hand them letters of apology.
I was wondering where you were going with that. Yeah, letters of apology, because that's exactly what they were trying to do in Nazi Germany, exterminate people who didn't fit their perfect profile.
Oh, now you're talking like an extremist, Pastor.
Actually, it's quite the opposite. Those people are the extremists, only wanting the picture-perfect people. I'm more than willing and glad to live with imperfection.
Which is why you're on the program with me.
Oh, well, thank you.
Let's go to the phones and talk with John. John, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Roland. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
Very interesting show. Real quick, let me try to bounce this off of you. We are blessed with two children that are special needs, Asperger syndrome situation. And you know, we find so much joy in the both of them. One of the things that I have been kind of mulling around in my mind, has the secular world's, I'm going to try to make this as easy for myself as I can to say it, has the secular world's encroachment, so to speak, on, you know, keeping everything separate between church and state, has that actually impeded, you know, faith-based things, whether it be for, you know, Lutheran, Catholic, or whatever, you know, to where they had programs at one time, I remember, even the hospitals and things of that nature, where a lot of the people from faith-based programs were assisting and helping these people. And has it gotten to the point that the secular world is basically saying, you know, since, okay, we don't have that option anymore, these people are just no good, we got to get rid of them?
I have to quantify my answer. Without divulging confidentiality, so I cannot be too specific,
okay.
I am aware of both Lutheran and non-Lutheran, Catholic and not, and secular situations.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to parochial schools, Some are good, some aren't. I'll be real honest with you.
Sure.
And when it comes to secular schools, some are good and some aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I almost think within the secular schools, you heard me mention the IEPs, and you're probably familiar
sure.
with that. And
oh,
anyone
yeah, absolutely.
With a disability is. That's all in place in the secular public schools. Then it really depends on the administration and how caring they're going to be with it, or how by the book and sterile.
Mm-hmm.
Now, technically, in the Lutheran school system, I'll speak more about the Lutheran rather than the Roman Catholic.
Sure.
They're not compelled to have IEPs. They usually mm-hmm. do when requested. There is a Lutheran special school district, which can be very helpful.
Right.
But it really then depends upon the administration
sure.
and if the teachers received any help. And
okay.
so my experience is it really depends upon the administration
mm-hmm.
and the particular teachers and the grade the student is in.
Right.
I wish I could say because we're Christian, we're better at it. I'm not sure I can, though.
I think, you know, on the broad-based scope of things, you know, as I had, you know, kind of looked at things, too, that, you know, I can remember, you know, as I go back quite a few years, you know, in some of our hospitals and things of that nature, you know, of course, you know, I was baptized Catholic years ago.
Okay.
That you had nuns and things, you know, people that, you know, did assistance with special needs programs and stuff. But, you know, it seemed like as I got older, and it seems like the government itself basically said, I mean, you know, I thought it was a very good thing myself. But I think the government has kind of, maybe it's possible that they've, you know, divided that. And, you know, now we're kind of run into the issues that we're running into today.
I will agree with you that in the hospital systems, because the majority of our hospitals,
mm-hmm.
when I say majority, it's just a little over 50%, were started by Christian organizations.
Right.
And as they were, they did have wonderful programs to help
mm-hmm.
those families
mm-hmm.
in the early stages.
Mm-hmm.
And now as they become secular,
right.
some of that forced by the government, some forced by economics to move away from the Christian base, yes, it has gotten worse. I will agree with you on that opinion.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to, you know, throw out my 2 cents worth on that and see what you both think. Roland, again, as usual, it's a wonderful show.
Thank you, John. We appreciate hearing from you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Talk to you soon.
Sure. And happy St. Patrick's Day. We don't want to miss that coming up tomorrow. Hey, you know, Pastor Andrus, there's been quite a resurgence in the United States, a lot of books being released on the founding fathers and the Constitution. And,
right.
and have you noticed that folks just seem to be getting a little bit more interested in this old dusty document that serves us?
Yes.
Okay, good answer.
Because I hesitated because I don't know where you're going.
Well, you're not. I guarantee you, this is what this is not even left field. This is so far. But I can make a connection to this.
I got to stop you for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
On this Ask the Pastor program, in case people don't realize it, when pastors come on, at least with me and you, I don't have a clue of what you're going to throw at me. And so sometimes I do get a little nervous.
Well, here is the headline, because
yes,
you know, apparently it's not just Americans that are getting interested in the Founding Fathers again.
Okay.
Apparently Muslim clerics in Egypt are garnering a real interest in the Founding Fathers. But not for the reasons you may think. Here's
okay.
here's the headline I present for you, Pastor Andrus. Egyptian clerics revisionist history. Ben Franklin was an anti-Semite who wanted to expel dangerous Jews from the U.S.
Mm.
And it goes on. It says earlier this month in El Rama, an Arabic TV station that features Egyptian clerics discussing the Jewish people. It's a program specifically about discussing, and it said after revisiting age-old anti-Semitic slurs like Jews are donkeys and apes and pigs,
mm-hmm.
the clerics went on to say that indoctrinating children to loathe the Jews is to them among the highest forms of Allah worship.
Oh, my.
Hmm. Now, what is interesting about this, in this particular program, is that these clerics are taking a spin on American history, which is at best revisionist. They like Benjamin Franklin because they say he was an anti-Semite who wanted to drive the dangerous Jews out of the fledgling United States via the Constitution. And this is a direct quote from one of these clerics. U.S. President Benjamin Franklin. Now, what's wrong with that story?
He wasn't a U.S. president.
All right, so we already see how much they're paying attention to the details here. President Benjamin Franklin said, according to this cleric, a great danger threatens the United States of America. That danger is the Jewish danger. In whichever land the Jews have settled, they have corrupted the morals and lowered the level of commercial honesty. If Palestine were given back to them, this is according to what he says is Franklin's view, if Palestine were given back to them, not all of them would go there because they are parasites and cannot live at the expense of their own kind. They must live among the Christians and others not of their race. Well, I can imagine what they must say, think about the Christians then. So much. This is, you know, it's all about love and peace and kumbaya. And
you know, I maybe I shouldn't even comment. I'll give my two cents, though, and it's only... This is really not a pastor's comment, but Dave's comments, from what I've read. Benjamin Franklin, from what I've read, he was certainly a deist. He believed in God. I'm not sure he was a strong Christian, though. And therefore, I don't ever remember reading anything that he was anti-Semitic. In fact, I would think quite the opposite, because he and all of the founding fathers were trying to give religious freedom to any moral-based religion, as long as it's moral-based, Bible-based, that it could hold to the Ten Commandments. I think Benjamin Franklin would have been okay with it.
Yeah, I agree with you, Pastor. It's I bring that up only because it goes to show, you know, the misperceptions that we have to cope with.
Yeah.
When it comes to the press, much like the earlier story about the priest and communion, when the press presents Islam. It's difficult to get a clear beat on this. Now, here comes another story from the Christian Post. Top Saudi religious official, the top Saudi religious official, is calling for the destruction of all churches. Now, this is not some whack job cleric in a backwater, you know, hamlet somewhere in Afghanistan. This is the top religious official of Saudi Arabia. And by the way, the gas you put in your car this morning, probably a good portion of it came from this part of the world.
Could be.
Says that Sheikh Abdul Aziz al-Sheikh, the Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia, the highest official of religious law in the Sunni country, reportedly declared this week that it's necessary to destroy all the churches. Now, he goes on to say to destroy all the churches in the region, implying that no other religion besides Islam shall be tolerated on the Arabian Peninsula. Now, never mind that there are no churches on the Arabian Peninsula. But the problem is, this country and this religious cleric, as the top religious official of Saudi Arabia, has a great deal of influence on the rest of that faith as it is practiced across the world.
But he is speaking about destroying the churches there in Saudi Arabia,
right?
Not in the world.
Well, yeah, that this particular story does not say about extending that, but it does go on to say that his words have evoked reactions. Because the hysteria that it generates very well could spread. In other words, the people who, like Jihad Watch and other websites that watch, you know, sort of extremist Islamic ideas percolate around the globe, very concerned that this is going to be sort of a call to action in other parts. Well, perhaps not in the United States, for example, but perhaps Indonesia, perhaps Nigeria, where we see church bombings going on all the time, perhaps Uganda. And other places like that.
Well, we see it in Iran.
And Egypt and Iraq and a number of places.
The challenge here is, and fortunately, the one in power and in control is not him, but rather a government controlled by more secular people. In Iran, as I understand it, it's not quite that way, and so they are more radical about that. That there isn't a balance there.
Well, now, in Iran, they would be Shiites as opposed to Sunnis, and Saudi Arabia tends to be Sunni, the Sunni sect of Islam.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But when it comes to, you know, inspiring people who do really stupid things in the name of religion, you know, there may be a wave of persecution coming against the church here very soon like we have never seen before.
It could be. Yeah. It could be. Luther faced it, as mentioned earlier, with St. Patrick. Europe faced it with the Muslim faith in the 8th century. It is a constant tension because, let's face it, on the other side of Christianity is the devil. He does not like Christians to succeed. He was hit hard when Jesus rose from the dead, and he wants to take down as many as he can to hell to suffer with him.
Let's grab one more quick call, Pastor Dave. Hey, Paul, thanks for calling. You're on with Pastor Andrus.
Hi, Pastor. It's me again.
Good morning again.
I couldn't help but hear about the Egyptian imams and Ben Franklin. I thought they would be upset to find out that one of the signers of the Constitution was a Jew. But as to what's going on in Arabia, we have to reflect back that we have been in essentially a 1600-year war, almost, no, 1400-year war since 643. Christendom came about, the term came about because of Christians being essentially relegated to a small area of Europe because the Islam had taken over the Balkans, much of France, virtually all of Spain, and other areas, and it's been a waxing and waning war over this period of time, which a lot of people don't know their history. And
good point, Paul. But actually, rather than a 14th century war, that would be against, in some ways, opposite of Christianity, Muslim, picking up the disguise of countries. You can trace it back to 2,000 years when the Roman Empire and Dionysus had it out for Christians, and Nero used them as torches at night to light his parties. But you can go all the way back to Cain and Abel.
Yeah, I'm cognizant of that, but I'm trying to stick with the present Muslim problem because you have liberals who tell you that, well, you just have to be tolerant. But, you know, when the...
Paul, I hate to do this to you, Paul, but the clock is ticking down. It is an evil taskmaster, and I have to click the button which does that, and that means that our time together for this hour has ended. With gratitude, Pastor Dave Andrus, thank you for serving us this morning for the past hour.
Happy to do so. Thank you.
And again, don't forget Lutheran Blind Missions in your prayers, as well as consider them prayerfully for your contributions. How do they find you again, Pastor Dave?
The website is blindmission.org. Toll-free number, 888-215-2455.
God bless you, my friend, and happy St. Patrick's Day. All right, Moments of Assurance next.
Listen Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.